Welcome to the EQ Fit Podcast. Our mission is to equip people to prosper in every aspect of their life. Whether you're at home or in the workplace, we explore practical ways of improving success, satisfaction, finding balance, and building enjoyable and beneficial relationships. Thank you for joining us.
So today we have a really highly actionable mission for anyone tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you manage a team or run a business or honestly just rely on other humans to get things done.
Right. We are going to help you assess and hopefully fix the psychological safety of your own team environment.
Which is such a critical topic.
It really is. And for this deep dive, we're relying on some fascinating source material.
Yeah.
It's a blog post titled "The Thriving Business Ecosystem" by Steve Goodner.
Yeah, and the piece actually starts with this great real-world example about a guy named Michael.
Right, Michael. So Michael owns a structural engineering firm over in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this 22-person team, like a really deep bench of brilliant, fully licensed engineers.
The kind of team you want. Business is booming for him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Michael has this one problem that is just quietly driving him crazy.
Oh, yeah. The weekly project reviews.
Yes. These are the meetings where they're supposed to go over, you know, the trickiest calculations of the week.
Yes.
But they become completely stubbornly silent.
Which, I mean, that's incredibly frustrating when you know you have a room full of really smart people.
Right.
You want that friction, you know? You want them actively kicking the tires on the plans.
And he just isn't getting any of it. He presents the week's challenges, asks the room, like, any concerns, anything I'm missing.
And just gets polite nods.
Nothing but polite nods. No one has questions. Everyone just quietly files back to their desks.
And initially, Michael actually thought this was a good thing.
Yeah, he thought it meant he was running this perfectly tight ship. Like, there's no dissent, so my plans must be flawless.
Right. Up until the inciting incident.
Oh, man. The inciting incident. So one Thursday, he's walking back to his office, and he overhears two of his absolute best young engineers talking by the coffee machine.
And they have completely no idea he's standing there.
None. And one of them says to the other, you know, we really should have flagged the load path issue on the Weston project.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He says, I saw it in the meeting. I just didn't want to be the one to say it.
I mean, that is a staggering realization for a business owner.
It really is.
Just to realize that the talent is there, the insight is right there in your building, but it's deliberately being withheld from you when it matters most.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to me, this is exactly like finding out your smoke detector has been unplugged by your own family just because they didn't like the beeping sound.
That is a brilliant way to look at it.
Right. Like the danger of a fire is still very much there, but your early warning system has just been deliberately turned off.
I love that smoke detector analogy. Because a smoke detector is explicitly designed to prevent a catastrophe.
Exactly.
But the trade-off is that you have to endure a little bit of loud, annoying noise.
Yeah, that occasional beep.
Right. And what Michael experienced at that coffee machine gets to the very core of what psychological safety actually is in a workplace.
Which the source text gives us a really crucial definition for, right?
It does. It points out that psychological safety is absolutely not the belief that everyone is just going to hold hands, be nice, and agree with you all the time.
Right. It's not about forced harmony.
Mm.
Or creating this perfectly stress-free utopia.
Not at all. It is the highly specific belief that you will not be punished socially, emotionally, or professionally for saying the thing that needs to be said.
That's the entire metric.
Exactly. An employee is constantly quietly asking themselves, will I pay a cost for bringing this up?
So in Michael's office, those engineers did a quick mental calculation.
Right. They weighed the benefit of fixing a load path against the cost of looking difficult in front of the boss.
And they decided the cost of speaking up in that boardroom was simply too high.
Yeah. They calculated that it was safer to just retreat to the coffee machine.
But let's pause here because I think, you know, it's easy to hear Michael's story and kind of brush it off.
Oh, for sure. You might think, well, engineers are introverted. Maybe they just don't like public speaking.
Exactly. But the source material takes this local Kansas City story and connects it to massive global research on daily management.
It does, because this really isn't just an engineering problem. It is a universal human behavior problem.
And to understand the scale, the text points us to Google's famous internal study, Project Aristotle.
Right. So Google looked at over 180 of their own internal teams over a 2-year period.
Wow, 180 teams.
Yeah. And they were hunting for what we could basically call the algorithmic dream. They wanted to find the perfect replicable formula for a high-performing team.
Which makes sense. I can completely see a tech giant doing that.
Oh, totally.
They probably thought, you know, if we just mix two introverts, one extrovert, a Stanford grad, and a manager with 10 years of tenure, we will get maximum productivity every time.
That was exactly their hypothesis. They looked at tenure, personality traits, individual coding ability, all of it.
And what did they find?
The data was a mess. None of those individual traits predicted team performance. None of them.
Really?
Yeah. You could put five absolute all-stars in a room together, and they would completely fail.
That's wild. So what was the secret sauce?
The single strongest predictor of a high-performing team, by a massive margin, wasn't who was on the team. It was psychological safety. It was how the team interacted.
So it didn't matter what raw materials you put in the engine if the engine itself wasn't a safe container.
Exactly.
And the source backs this up with even more foundational research, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at a completely different industry.
Yeah, the Harvard Business School hospital study.
Oh, right. Amy Edmondson's work.
Yes. So she studied clinical hospital teams, and she found what looks at first glance like a complete statistical paradox.
Okay, I remember this. She was looking at error rates in hospitals.
Right. And her research showed that the higher performing hospital teams actually reported more errors than the lower performing teams.
See, I have to stop you there. Because on the surface, that makes absolutely no sense.
It sounds completely backwards.
Right. If I'm looking at a spreadsheet as a hospital administrator, the team with the most errors is the one I am putting on a performance improvement plan.
Exactly.
Why are the quote-unquote best doctors making the most mistakes?
But that's the trap of looking purely at the surface data. They were not making more mistakes.
They weren't.
No. They were simply safe enough to name the mistakes they did make.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the lower performing teams were making just as many, if not far more, errors. The difference is they were hiding them.
Wow.
They were sweeping them under the rug because their culture punished mistakes.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Go for it.
Because I can totally hear a small business owner listening to this right now and pushing back.
Sure.
They might think, look, I'm running a small business. My team isn't bringing me any major problems. Everyone is nodding in the meetings. Shouldn't I just pat myself on the back for running a tight ship?
It's a fair question.
Right. Like, is the absence of dissent always a red flag? Mm-hmm. Maybe things are just going really well.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the absence of dissent is actually one of the most dangerous signs for your business health. Yeah. Think about those lower performing hospital teams hiding their clinical errors. Or Michael's engineers hiding the structural load path issue.
Oh, right.
The absence of dissent does not mean the problems have ceased to exist. It means your team has decided that the cost of speaking up is higher than the cost of staying quiet.
Okay, that is a huge shift in perspective.
The text actually describes every quiet meeting as a small tax the team is paying on the future of your company.
A silent tax.
Yeah.
I think that concept is huge.
It really is.
Because those hidden errors, they don't just vanish, they compound. An unreported error today is a massive crisis tomorrow.
Exactly.
Which means as a leader, your immediate job is to figure out exactly what kind of information is being hidden from you.
Right. You have to find out what's missing.
And our source material actually breaks this down into four distinct voices that your team is silently deciding whether or not to use on any given day.
And the goal for any manager listening to this is to get all four of these voices out of the parking lot and back into the boardroom.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because as we go through these, you listening at home can probably recognize exactly which of these voices are missing in your own weekly meetings.
Oh, definitely.
So the first one is the question voice. This sounds like, I don't understand this, or can we clarify why we are doing it this way?
Right.
And the text notes, this is usually the very first voice to disappear when safety drops.
Because nobody wants to look uninformed, especially in a professional setting.
Wait, you don't want to look like the one person who isn't keeping up.
Exactly. If your company culture subtly demands that everyone always has the answers, then asking a basic clarifying question feels like a massive professional risk.
You are essentially raising your hand to say, I am the one person in the room who doesn't get it.
Yep. But the business impact of losing the question voice is really severe.
How so?
Well, when people stop asking for clarity, your team starts executing plans based on assumptions that no one has actually tested.
Oh, wow.
You're building an entire project on a completely shaky foundation simply because everyone was too afraid to ask if the concrete was dry.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
We fake understanding to protect our ego, and the project suffers.
Exactly.
So the second voice is the concerned voice. This sounds like, I'm worried about this timeline, or I've seen this pattern fail before.
This is exactly Michael's coffee machine voice.
Yes. Those young engineers were deeply concerned about the Weston project, but they just swallowed it.
And as a leader, the concern voice is your early warning system. It's your radar. When you lose this voice, you are essentially flying blind into the dark. You will not know about the incoming storm until lightning literally strikes the plane.
Man, that is scary. By the time a problem actually reaches your desk, it's no longer just a concern. It's a full-blown crisis that is going to cost you money to fix.
Exactly. It's too late.
Which brings us to the third voice. The idea voice. This is the, what if we tried something completely different voice?
Right. The innovation voice.
Yeah. And the text points out that in a low safety climate, this voice retreats into private notebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Like half-baked ideas just feel way too dangerous to say out loud.
And the psychology here is so fascinating because modern corporate culture heavily rewards polish over process.
It's so true. We want perfect slide decks and fully formed strategies right out of the gate.
Right. So if an employee has a weird, unpolished, half-baked idea, they filter themselves. They think, I'll just wait until I have this fully figured out before I share it.
But of course, they never do.
Never. And the tragic part about losing the idea voice is that the company slowly stops innovating.
It just stagnates.
Exactly. And because it happens silently, the owner or the manager is almost always the last person in the building to notice that the creative well has run completely dry.
You just slowly become obsolete while everyone politely nods at you.
Exactly.
Which leaves us with the fourth and final voice, the mistake voice.
Yes.
This one sounds like, I got that wrong, or that was my call and it didn't work. And if we think back to that Harvard Hospital study, this is the exact voice that is most predictive of a high-performing team.
Because catching mistakes while they are small is the absolute only reliable way to prevent catastrophic failures later.
It's just like a software patch. Think about it. If one of your junior developers finds a critical bug in the code,
right,
but they don't report it because they are terrified of getting yelled at for writing bad code,
mm-hmm.
That unreported bug stays in the system.
And it is going to crash the entire platform later.
Exactly. It's going to cost you a client. It's going to ruin a major contract launch, or it's going to cost someone their job.
That is the exact mechanism of the silent attacks we were talking about. It is small, unsaid errors, quietly compounding in the background until the bill finally comes due.
So, okay, now we understand the diagnosis.
We do.
We know why the silent room is so dangerous, and we know exactly which four voices, question, concern, idea, and mistake, we are losing.
Right.
So the natural next question is the tactical one. How do you actually get these voices back into the room?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is. And our source material pivots here from diagnosing the problem to giving us highly actionable solutions that you can use, like this week.
Yeah. Specifically, it contrasts two unique approaches, invitations versus debriefs.
Okay. Let's examine the invitation first. Specifically, the text calls this the question voice invitation.
Right. So the tactic here is to ask a question you have never asked directly in a meeting.
Instead of the generic any questions, you ask something highly specific.
Exactly. Something like, where in the specific rollout plan are you most uncertain?
Or my personal favorite, what would you have done differently if this had been entirely your call?
That's a great one. But the text has a really crucial warning about the mechanics of what happens right after you ask that question.
Oh, yeah, the silence.
Yes. You are going to be met with dead, uncomfortable silence. And the most important tip is you have to manage that silence. You cannot fill it.
That is often the hardest part for most leaders, right?
Yeah.
Our instinct is to save the room from the awkwardness.
It's agonized.
It's like a high-stakes staring contest.
Yeah.
You ask the question. No one speaks for 4 or 5 seconds, and the tension is just horrible.
Your instinct as a leader is to jump in and say, well, I think we should do X.
But if you jump in to fill that silence, you just proved to your team that the invitation was fake.
Exactly. You taught them it was just a rhetorical exercise.
And the text points out something profound here, that silence you hear is not resistance. It's the team rapidly trying to calculate if your invitation is actually real.
They are reading the room. They are running that internal calculation again, waiting to see if it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
If you just wait it out, if you just sit in the discomfort, someone will eventually speak. And when they do, you prove it's safe.
Right. Now, contrast that real-time spontaneity with a second tactical tool, the two-question debrief.
Yeah, this operates very differently.
This is a dedicated, structured 15-minute space at the end of a major project. And the rule is, you focus only on two specific questions.
Question one, what did we get right?
And question two, what did we miss and how could we have caught it earlier?
And the strict rule of the debrief is that you cannot skip that second question.
Right, you cannot let the rune off the hook just because the project was mostly a success.
What's fascinating here is how these two tools serve entirely different functions in your daily management strategy.
How so?
Well, the question voice invitation is fantastic for daily use. It's meant to spontaneously disrupt that polite automatic nodding you were talking about earlier.
Right. It tests the waters in real time and keeps people on their toes.
Exactly. But the two-question debrief provides a structured, predictable container.
I see.
It intentionally forces the mistake voice and the concern voice into the open, but it does it without blame. It normalizes the whole process.
That makes sense.
The mere act of you as a leader running that debrief calmly is a massive psychological safety signal in itself. You are showing them systemically that we look at our flaws as a collective team, not as individual failures.
I really appreciate how practical those two tools are for a manager's toolkit.
Me too.
But the source material saves the biggest hitter for last.
It really does.
It argues that while invitations and debriefs are great structural tools, there is one master key. There is one ultimate signal that can shift a team's communication culture instantly.
But it requires the leader to be entirely vulnerable.
Yeah. It requires actively putting your own professional ego on the line in front of the people who report to you.
It's called the public mistake rep.
Okay, so here is the tactic in practice. You, the leader, find one small mistake, misjudgment, or bad call that you made in the last 30 days.
Right.
And you name it, unfussily, in front of your entire team.
The word unfussily is doing a lot of heavy lifting there.
Oh, absolutely.
This is not a tearful confession. It's not a therapy session where you beg for forgiveness.
Right. The text calls it a calibration.
Exactly. You are the only person in the building who possesses the positional power to prove that the mistake voice is actually safe to use.
You have to go first.
You have to model the behavior you want to see.
So what does this all mean? Does this actually work in the real world?
It does.
Because let me push back on this tactic for a second. I can absolutely hear a manager thinking, doesn't this just make the boss look completely incompetent to their employees?
Sure.
Like if I stand up and say, hey, everyone, I messed up the Q3 projections, aren't they going to lose respect for my authority?
It is a very common fear, but the research and honestly the reality of human psychology show the exact opposite. Yeah. Owning a mistake unfussily projects immense confidence.
I guess that makes sense.
Think about it. Incompetent leaders hide their mistakes because their ego is fragile. Confident leaders calibrate from them because they care more about the outcome than their image.
Wow. That's powerful.
And put yourself in the team's perspective. They already know you make mistakes.
Yeah, you aren't fooling anyone by hiding them.
Exactly. When you admit them publicly, you aren't revealing incompetence. You are revealing honesty. You are giving them the ultimate, undeniable proof that they will not be punished for doing the exact same thing.
It gives them permission to be human, because the boss is human.
Precisely.
Which brings us perfectly full circle back to Michael, our structural engineer in Kansas City.
Ah, yes. Michael.
So Michael decided to take this advice. He walked into his dead silent weekly project review meeting, and he decided to use a public mistake rep.
And he chose to do it about the very thing he overheard at the coffee machine.
Yes, the Weston Project load path issue.
And he didn't make a grand dramatic speech about how he had failed them as a leader.
No, he just opened his laptop and owned the error.
That's the unfussy part in action.
He literally just looked at the room and said, I want to name something before we start. There was a load path issue in our early calculations for the Weston Project. I got it wrong.
Just like that?
Yeah. He went on to say, I heard about it after the fact, and I want to be entirely clear that the way to fix this isn't for people to raise it carefully in the parking lot. It's for me to make it safer for you to raise it in this room. I am working on it. Thank you for your patience.
Man, he took all the social risk upon himself right there.
He really did.
And what happened next?
Well, according to the text, the room went completely still.
There was that high-stakes staring contest we talked about.
Exactly. And then, for the first time in 14 months of total polite silence,
yeah,
one of the young engineers from the coffee machine cleared his throat and said, Michael,
yeah,
actually, on the next project, I have a concern I want to flag.
Wow. He proved the room was safe, and immediately, the early warning radar turned back on.
It is such a profound relief.
Yeah.
You can almost feel the tension leaving that young engineer's shoulders.
Absolutely.
The best ideas in Michael's firm weren't missing. He didn't need to hire new people.
No.
The solutions were right there in the room the entire time, just locked behind a wall of self-preservation.
Which I think is the ultimate synthesis of everything we've looked at today.
Mm-hmm.
Psychological safety is not a poster on the wall. It is not something you can just install with a one-off corporate training retreat where everyone does trust falls.
Right, you can't just declare we are a safe space now.
You can't. It is built or it is destroyed in those small, daily, mundane moments where your team is quietly calculating if you are safe to talk to.
Yeah.
The talent is already there. The ideas are already there. As a leader, your only job is to lower the cost of sharing them.
Lower the cost of sharing. That is the perfect way to frame it.
Glad you agree.
So here is your call to action for this week. We want you to try what the text calls the post-meeting voice audit.
It takes exactly 5 minutes.
Yeah. After your next leadership meeting or your next team huddle, just sit down at your desk with a piece of paper and notice.
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself, which of those four voices, the question voice, the concern voice, the idea voice, or the mistake voice, actually showed up in the room today?
And more importantly, which ones were missing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Don't judge yourself. Don't immediately try to fix it. Just notice where the silence is living in your business.
And as you run that audit on your own meetings, I will leave you with a final thought to mull over, building on the philosophy we explored today.
Let's hear it.
If the absence of dissent is essentially a silent tax on your business, what is the exact financial cost of the best idea that is currently trapped at your office coffee machine simply because you haven't given your team the right signal to bring it through your door?
Oh, man. That is literally a $1 million question for some of you.
It really is.
Well, thank you so much for joining us as we explore the mechanics of a thriving ecosystem. Time to go plug that smoke detector back in, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. If you have any questions about this week's episode or maybe a suggestion for future episodes you'd like us to explore, please contact us through our website at eqfit.org. For more information and inspiration, connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube at eqfit.org.